Good morning, everyone. My name is Tony, and I am an alcoholic. I am such a grateful alcoholic to be here. My home group is the Courage to Change group in Vancouver, British Columbia. My sobriety date is October the 7th, 2001. And I was privileged to be in Toronto, and now to be here in San Antonio is just, it blows my mind. I had an old friend tell me very early in my sobriety, I forget to remember. Well, after today and last night and all day yesterday, I remember. And I am grateful. Anyway, I am so pleased to be able to introduce the first speaker, and that is Kenny L. from Texas.
My name is Kenny Landers, and I am an alcoholic. I've been sober since October the 25th of 2001, and for that I am truly grateful. You know, I really didn't want to be up here first. You know, I've been dreading and looking forward to all in the same, this, you know, this morning, this day. Turns out that I'm the baby of this whole bunch, you know. It's just unbelievable. We were having lunch yesterday morning, and my sponsor was sitting there at the table with us, you know, and we were talking about it was only 20 minutes that I had to be up here, and she said, "Oh, you can spend that time talking about me." And you know what's ironic about that whole situation is that yesterday she did a presentation across the hall that said breaching the walls of ego. So Linda, stand up and let's all see that my sponsor is here today. She knows better than play with me because I can give as good as I can get, you know. But I am happy to be here, you know. And I've thought long and hard. And I don't know how you could be here and sit in this room. You know, when we walked in a minute ago, there's been a lot of people here that's been very supportive of me. We walked in the room a little bit ago and, you know, my wife was with me. Clancy was fixing to speak. And I heard those words that I've been hearing most of my life. A lot of times I said them to myself. And the words that came out of her mouth were, "You're screwed." You know, and I thought, Lord, there's a lot of people here today, you know, and it is a big room, you know. But it's a privilege and a pleasure to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And Clancy, I think, talked about it up here a little bit ago. You know, I was taught from a very early age in sobriety that gratitude is not an emotion, it's not a feeling, it's an action. You know, and that if I'm grateful for my sobriety, what I'm supposed to do is try to help somebody else, try to give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and try to do the things that are asked of me to the best of my abilities. There's been some people that's tried to coach me before I got here. You know, they've tried to give me a notepad and asked me to take notes and made a lot of suggestions. And I'm just going to get lost anyway, so that really doesn't matter. What I'd like to tell you, I guess, is that... You know, on October the 25th of 2001, let's skip back up. On August the 8th of 2001, I walked out of prison for the third time. And, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do in my life. For some reason, I thought that I might try to do something different. I had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous before. I'd been into meetings inside the prison system, not because I wanted to stay sober, but because I wanted to make parole and get out of there, you know. And, you know, so I never paid very much attention, you know. I never wanted to get sober until the day I got here, you know. And but what I'm very grateful for today is that, you know, like I said, I walked out on August the 8th, 2001. I decided I was going to do something a little bit different. I actually made it 50 miles down the road before I grabbed my first cold beer and went back to doing the same thing that I've always done. You know, for most of my life, I thought that dope was my problem. You know, I thought if I just quit doing those drugs that I'd quit going back to prison. What I didn't realize is that everything I do in my life starts with a drink and ends with a drink, you know. And that was just a cycle. You know, I'd get out, I'd take a drink, I'd do that other stuff, and I'd drink because I didn't like the, got to where I didn't like the feeling that those other things did for me. And, you know, but on October the 24th, you know, something happened in my life. I've been out 90 days. I went back to the same kind of lifestyle that I'd led my whole life. You know, I was back to illegal activity. I didn't have a job. I wouldn't go to work. I was drinking every night. And, you know, some things happened. About 3 o'clock for some reason that next afternoon, some things happened that made me decide that maybe I did want to change my life. And maybe I did want to look at my drinking. And maybe I did need to do something about that. And what I'm grateful for today is that I picked up the phone and I called a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, you hear it said a lot that you may be the only big book that anyone ever sees, you know. And I'd been to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, not to stay sober. I didn't have a clue what the steps were. I didn't know what you did. I just knew you didn't drink. And I thought that if you went to Alcoholics Anonymous, you was a big wuss and a sissy. And, you know, it just wasn't my cup of tea. But, you know, I picked that phone up and I made a phone call. Over the years, you know, I'd had people come to my house. There was a lot of years that I was a drug dealer. And people would come to my house and they'd be trading me this or that and want to give me everything that they had. And I'd pick the phone up and I'd called this girl before and I'd said, you know, this person needs some help. Can you help them? You know, they're just not, you know, there's something wrong with them, you know. And but I never looked at myself. But on that afternoon, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5, somewhere like that, I decided that I wanted to do something different in my life. I picked up the phone, and I'm so thankful today that when that sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous answered that phone, I'm sure that I wasn't in her plans that day. You know, I'm sure she didn't think about me, but she answered that phone, and I said, you know, I said, I want to do something different in my life, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know how to do it. And, you know, she was probably cooking supper for her husband at that time. And you know, I'm sure there was a lot of things going on in her life right then. But what she said to me right then was she said, you need to come over here. She didn't say, meet me at a meeting at 8 o'clock. She didn't say, here, call somebody else. She said, you need to come over here. And, you know, guys, this was the worst I'd ever felt in my life right then. And you know what the words that came out of my mouth were? Right now. I said, you don't understand. I've been up all night. I've been drinking, you know, I'd stuck a needle in my arm again for the umpteenth time. And I said, I really don't feel like coming over there. And she said, no, if you want to do something different, you need to do it right now. And, you know, right then and there, I believe it was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, I showed up at the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, an agnostic. I did not have any belief in a higher power. And I walked over to her house, you know, and we got to talking. And you know, the funny thing is that my sobriety date would probably be the 24th. But before I went to her house, I decided I needed a Xanax to calm my nerves. You know, so she made me change my sobriety date over that. And so I went over and I seen her and she outlined a plan of action, you know. And I'm so thankful for sponsorship. You know, I'm so grateful. You know, there's 3 sides to that triangle. It's recovery, unity, and service. And I thank God that I have a sponsor who participated in all sides of that triangle. And, you know, I went over and I sat down with her and we started to talk. And I thank God that I'm grateful that I don't have a sponsor that patted me on the back and said, oh, it'll be all right. You might want to do this. This is what I did. She said, if you want to stay here and you want to stay sober and you don't want to drink again, this is what you need to do. And, you know, at that time, I had surrendered. I took step 1. I was ready to change my life. And I started to do those things, you know. And, you know, you hear it said a lot that not drinking. You know, drinking is just a symptom, you know. And what changed my life, what led me to a power greater than myself, what helped me go back and clean up the wreckage of my past were the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's what changes your life. Not sitting in the fellowship, or at least for me, not sitting in the fellowship. And since the day I walked in here and I picked up that desire chip that first night at a, you know, my little town is, I belong to the Into Action Group in Border, Texas. On a good night, we have 13 or 14 people. You know, the next night I had to leave town. I had to go to a different group out in a little town that's probably got 500 people. And I picked up my first desire chip. And since I came in here, I've never had to write another chapter or take another drink one day at a time, you know. And that's all because of you guys, you know. Because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life has changed tremendously. On August of 2009, for the first time in 20 years, I got off parole, you know. And for a guy like me, that is pretty amazing, you know. I love that kind of lifestyle, you know, and I love to live it. And today, you know, all my life I looked for the softer, easier way. And today I have found the softer, easier way. And it's right here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And all you got to do is suit up and show up and your life will start to change. But, you know, one of the things, like I said, early on I was taught that you know, gratitude is not an emotion, it's an action. And I remember that, you know, I heard people talk about emptying ashtrays and chairing meetings. And, you know, I did all that. And I started out at an early age, you know, in sobriety doing that because we have such a small group. And about 90 days sober, my sponsor said, I think you need to be the GSR. And heck, I couldn't even spell GSR at that time, you know. And I said, what is a GSR? You know, and what happened to me is something that always happens. The fear sets in, you know. All my life, when I got scared, you know, when somebody would ask me to do something, I'd usually say, oh, that's a bunch of BS, or I'm not going to do that. And it's only because the fear had set in and I was scared, you know. And I said, I don't know what that is. What I do? And she threw the Secret Service manual at me, you know, what I hear you guys talk about. She said, read that. And so, you know, I set out at 90 Days Sober to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And since I've been here, I've participated in everything that Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, has to offer, you know. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, why I get to stay here, why I've never had to go back out and drink again. 20 minutes, you're going short. But, you know, like I said, when I got ready to come up here and this morning, you know, the fear had set in. But, you know, the first thing that I thought about was the things that my sponsor used to tell me. When I call my sponsor and I'd start to whine or talk about this or that, you know, the first words out of her mouth were, did you pray about it? God, I hate it. Did you pray about it? And I'd say, no, I didn't. And she said, you might try that. And I'd do that. And today, you know, when things are good in my life and when things are bad in my life, either way, I try to take time and I try to pray about it. Because if I let go and let God, I know things are going to work out, you know, the way that they're supposed to. I don't know how you could sit in this room. You know, gratitude has been the theme throughout just about every speaker I've heard that's spoken in these rooms, you know. I was sitting there last night. They call me the crybaby at my group. Every birthday night I cry. And, you know, last night they were telling me how wonderful the flag ceremony was and that I was going to be crying and it'd be all right. And they told me I'd cry here today, but the fears overtook me here today. But anyway, we were in that stadium last night, and this is the first international I've ever been able to attend. And, you know, it wasn't the flag ceremony that made me cry. What it was when I looked around the room, and this was something I never thought that I would do because I don't watch sports much, but I watch the stadium, and I see them do that wave. And I thought, how stupid. Why does anybody want to? And I'm sitting in there, and I see all you guys, and I got up with you, and I did that wave. And the goosebumps came over me, and I thought, you know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous working together one more time. And it just went around that room, and it was just beautiful, and it was just perfect, you know, and tears were running down my eyes. And I got goosebumps just like I do right now, you know. And, you know, I can never repay you guys for the life that you've given me. You know, I went from a, you know, I'm still an ex-convict. That's the way I think about myself. You know, one year sober, the highlight of my life was not picking up a one-year medallion, although that was wonderful to get heavy metal instead of the plastic. But it was, what I got the opportunity to do was to go back into the prison system. And I went in on the partner's plan because I did not have enough sobriety. And that's the thing we have here in Texas. And to be able to walk inside of those walls and not have to wear that white suit, and to let those guys know that, you know, there is another way to live life, and that if you don't ever want to come back and live in this prison again, you don't have to do it. You know, you have a choice, you know. One day at a time, you know, we can change our lives. And I went from that guy who didn't have a job, you know, walked out of prison. I had a pair of Levi's. I didn't have a home. You know, I lived off women. I took from everybody, you know. And I started to work these steps and my life started to change. I got a job. I have the job where I'm at today. I'm a supervisor. I work inside a big oil refinery inside of Borgen, one of the largest inland refineries. And, you know, they came about where they had, they were going to do background checks. And because of you guys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you didn't have 5 years off of some type of paper or being off of supervision, you were not going to be able to work in there. Well, guys, they called me down there, and I talked to a couple of people. My boss made some phone calls, and they waived that stipulation for me, and they let me keep my job, and they spoke on my behalf. And you know, you guys are not applauding me. What you're doing is applauding yourself, because without you, I never would have been there. You know, it never would have happened. You know, you've changed my life immensely. There's some of you in here that I'd like to thank, and I don't even know you. You know, I had some sponsees. I picked the phone up. Because of the General Service Office, we get directories that have phone numbers from all over the United States, all over the world. You know, we can find AA anywhere. And, you know, through the years, I picked up the phone. I had a sponsee who was in California, and he called me, and he says, "I don't think I'm going to make it." He said, "What I need to do." And I picked up the phone. And I called somebody in California, San Diego, I think maybe it was, and I didn't even know you. And you answered the phone, and I said, "I got a guy there, and he thinks he's going to drink, or he might drink, and he needs to get to a meeting." And I said, "Will you pick him up?" You didn't hesitate. You said, "Sure. Where's he at? We'll meet him." And you got him, and you took him to a meeting. You know, I have a son that's 31, 32 somewhere in there. You'd think I'd know that by now, but anyway, he called me from Fort Worth. You know, a few years ago, and he said, "Dad," he said, I want to do something different." He called me Mr. AA at the time, because I'm always in something in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that I can't talk to my son. I can't help my son, you know, but you guys can. And I picked up the phone of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I called you on the phone, and I said, "My son's down there, and he wants to do something different in his life, and would you pick him up and get him to the meeting?" And you know what? You didn't know me from Adam, but you said, "Yes, I would." And whoever the guy was, you picked him up and you took him. And yeah, I remember he called me on the phone a couple of days later, and he said, "Oh, Dad, man, this is unbelievable. My life is getting great." He said, "I got a job. I went to this job." This is 3 or 4 days into Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, "I got a job." He said, "I went in. I needed a car. There's a guy there." He says, "Oh, I'll let you pay out the car." Now, my son is just like me. He's been to prison. You know, he gave me my first AA book. When I decided I was going to do this, he came in and throwed me a big book, and he said, "I don't need that in my life no more." And he didn't use a nice word. He had been to all kinds of treatment. I've never been to treatment, you know, but he threw me that book. But anyway, you guys picked him up, and he called me and tells me about the unbelievable blessings that have come about because he went to Alcoholics Anonymous. On the fourth day, I didn't get a telephone call. On the fifth day, I called his mom and found out he was in jail for possession of cocaine. But that's not the point. The point is that you guys were there and you had your hand out, and I'm grateful to each and every one of you for always being there and having your hand out. You know, he showed up at my little group. He made that phone call again about 60 days ago. At our meeting last Thursday night, he picked up his 60-day chip again. And what's unbelievable about that story is I keep telling him that this program is, I try not to tell him, but I really do tell him, that this program is about more than drinking. And when he got up at the podium on Thursday night to get his chip, he stood before the people in that room and he made amends for breaking into that club and taking their money. You know, he had broke in and stole the money and he had went to prison for it. And I knew right then that he had finally figured out. And who knows if he's going to make it or not, but he had finally figured out that there's more to Alcoholics Anonymous than just not drinking. And he set out on a path to change his life and make right the things that he's done wrong. And, you know, I know that if he does the 12 steps, takes the 12 steps and does them to the best of his ability, that his life will change and that he'll never have to go back to prison again. And I know that as long as he suits up and shows up, you guys will continue to be there. And you'll continue to have the doors open and you'll continue to stick your hand out and embrace us in the kind of love that only we can do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is an unbelievable program. And, you know, if you're sitting out in that audience today and you don't think alcohol might be your problem, maybe it's some of those other issues and those other substances, But if you do drink, please come and see us at Alcoholics Anonymous, and I guarantee you we can find you a different way to live.
Thank you, Kenny. How many of you have a gratitude list in your wallet or in your purse? I do. You know, I forget to remember. But when I get into that place and the IBSC starts working in my head, if I pull out my gratitude list, everything goes away. Because I am grateful just to be alive and to be here and to be doing, I like to think, is God's work. Our next speaker is Kate M. from New Jersey. So, Kate.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kate, and I am an alcoholic. Where's my cheering section? Thank you. Oh, yes, this is a very big room. And you all look good in your lingerie today. My very oldest and dearest friend in AA, who got sober a few months after I did, and we were best buddies for a long time until she moved away, and we're rooming this weekend, and she told me to say that, so. I love you too, Cindy. Oh. So, by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous and all of you people here and many more who aren't here, I have been privileged to be sober since August 16, 1989. And I haven't always been grateful. I came into this program a unique person. And I did not stay unique very long. You all saw to that. I had my first drink when I was 14 years old. My first drink by choice, I think that. I'm sure I had little sips out of my uncle's beers, and I thought that was so cool when they sat me on their lap and let me sip their beer. And I come from a long line of alcoholics, and I can call them alcoholics because they've called themselves alcoholics. And my mother had five children, and four of us are in Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I finally decided to get sober, and I had nothing else to do or nowhere else to go, I knew who to call. And I called my brother, who had 12 years at the time in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was very, very active. And I hated this program. You know, when I was out there drinking and having my good old time, you know, they were picking me up for picnics and little parties and celebrations. And they never told me what these celebrations and picnics were, but they were sober celebrations and picnics. And I would go and I would, you know, talk to all of you people about how sick you are. And I wouldn't mention anything about my problem. No, it skipped right over me. And I was just a real sick woman when I came into this program. When I was 16 years old, my parents decided that I was a bad influence on my siblings, so they asked me to go away. And I thought that was great because I could go out on my own and I could do exactly what I wanted to do and go where I wanted to go, and I didn't have to worry about anything or anyone. And it was a little harder than that. So I dropped out of school and I got a full-time job and I supported myself and I promised I would never go home, and I never went home again, never moved home again. But I had a lot of lessons along the way, and there were a lot of bad experiences in my life, and I made a lot of choices. You know, I think I was 10 years sober when I finally realized that my role models weren't exactly the best role models in the world, and I was wondering why I had so many problems with relationships. And it was because the relationships I knew were violent and mean and nasty and screaming and yelling and cussing. And so that's what I did. You know, I thought that was just normal. And somewhere along the way, I decided before I got sober that I didn't like that behavior. But unfortunately, every time I picked up a drink, that was me all over again. And I couldn't control myself. I not only could not control my drinking, I could not control my behavior. It was, you know, they talk about being happy, joyous, and free. And I was unhappy, miserable, and a prisoner in my own mind. And that was me to a T. I developed a lot of street skills when I was out there. So when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and you thought you were going to tell me what to do, you know, I told you I wasn't going to do it. And I made my sobriety, my early sobriety, very, very difficult for myself, more difficult than it ever had to be. So if you're out there and you're doing what you want to do and not what your sponsor wants you to do or your home group wants you to do, think about it again. Because once I started doing what I was told to do, I became a very grateful woman. I was thinking this morning about how many times I've heard that word this weekend, grateful. How many people are grateful? I'm grateful for this and I'm grateful for that, and I live a life of gratitude. And, you know, I used to hate that word. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard people identify themselves as grateful alcoholics, I thought you were nuts. How could you possibly be grateful? And now I'm in meetings frequently with someone who calls himself grateful so-and-so. And I told him I was going to talk about him today up here. And, you know, when I first heard him say that, I cringed a little bit. And I thought, you know, why not be grateful? I have so many things to be grateful about. You know, when I hit my bottom, I was a sniveling little thing on the floor, all curled up in a ball, rocking back and forth, asking God to just take me away because I couldn't do this anymore. I was in so much physical, emotional, and spiritual pain. I hated myself. I hated my life. I was the scum of the earth. And yet, to look at me, if I could get off the floor, I would get dressed and do my hair, put my makeup on, and go out, and you would think I was the happiest person in the world. You know, put a few drinks in me, and I was happy. I was happy, well, I wasn't joyous and free, but I thought I was happy. But, you know, going out and saying, I'm only going to have one tonight, but I better have two or three before I leave the house. That was my life. I could never just have one. From the time I picked up my first drink, I wanted to drink, and I did every single opportunity I could. And once I became of age, which was 18 in New Jersey at the time, there was no stopping me, you know. So I got sober, and I met a boy on AA campus, you know, and, you know, that was part of my uniqueness. We were going to be happy ever after, and, you know, it was going to work for us. And it has worked for some of you, but it didn't work for me because I still didn't know how to have relationships. And you know, I had this, I had five sponsors the first year I was sober. Five sponsors. I was a complete and total nut case. And like I said, I was going to do it my way. But I met this woman, and oh my gosh, she was like the worst she was like a stormtrooper, and she grabbed a hold of me, and she made me promise if anything ever happened with this relationship, I would become a newcomer all over again. And, you know, arrogant me. Oh, sure, I can promise that, because nothing's ever going to happen to this relationship. We're happy. Well, that lasted 4 years. And I hit a second bottom in my fourth year of sobriety, and it was bad. And I wanted to drink, and I wanted to die all over again. And the women in this program grabbed a hold of me by the shirt collar, and they absolutely dragged my butt around, and they made me better, and they made me become a newcomer all over again. And I did what I was told, and I worked the steps as if my life depended on it. You know, I did the steps in the first 4 years, but they were mostly half-hearted. And the one thing I did do is I did a thorough as I possibly could at the time, fourth step. And I'm one of these people, I don't think that it's necessary to run through the steps in the first year, you know, 1 month per step, although I thought I was going to do that when I came in. And I hit a stumbling block at step four, because looking at myself was the hardest thing I think I have ever done in my entire life. But I was trying to be as honest as I possibly could, and I wrote it all down on paper. And I shared it with my stormtrooper sponsor. And I found out that even my deepest, darkest secret, she had shared a similar situation. And again, I was not unique anymore. I was not unique. And every time I experienced something like that, I was a little more grateful. And I was a little closer to my higher power, who I choose to call God. And thank goodness I was thorough with my fourth step, because at 4 years of sobriety, after I wanted to curl up and die again, about 4 months later, I got a knock on my front door, and my deepest, darkest secret was standing right there before me. It was a son I had given up for adoption in 1969. And he was 24 years old, and he wanted to know me. And we're very close today. As a matter of fact, in December, he celebrated 16 years of sobriety. Another miracle of this program, and I had nothing to do with it except being honest with him and saying, if you've never done drugs and alcohol, then you're not my son. Bottom line. I have two beautiful grandchildren, and that's what he came back to tell me, that he was alive and well and that I had two grandchildren. And I was never able to have any more children, so God gave me a gift when I needed it the most and put someone in my life that I could never have imagined I could ever have in my life. And for that, again, I was so incredibly grateful. And I'll never forget the first meeting I took him to was an open meeting in Vernon, New Jersey, and it was a Sunday night, and I used to go out to meetings all the time, and one night he was visiting, he said, can I go to that meeting with you? I said, oh yeah, it's an open meeting, non-alcoholics can come. And I took him to the beginner's room, and at the end of the meeting, the guy says, we have time for one more. And my son raises his hand. And he says, my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is my birth mother. And I said, thank God I did a good fourth step. And I was really proud, and I broke down and I cried that day. And the tears were grateful and the tears were happy. You know, when I was 90 days sober, I told you I was a lunatic in early sobriety, and when I was 90 days sober, I was driving up Route 80 in New Jersey, and, you know, our roads are pretty horrible and always under construction. And it was rush hour on a Friday night, and everyone was going in my direction. And I had this little red sports car. I used to race cars drunk. And Is there any other way? And I had my little red sports car, and this guy cut me off. And I said, oh, no, this is not going to happen to me today. So I went after him. Bumper-to-bumper traffic. That shoulder was built for my car, and I was in and out, weaving in and out. And I had the CB radio on my car at the time, because I needed that, because I was a lunatic on the road. And I had this bumper sticker on the back of my car. It said, higher powered. Be careful what you put on your car, guys. Be careful. So here I am, I'm crazy, and I got two hands on the wheel, and I'm gritting my teeth, and I'm going to kill this guy. And all of a sudden, this little voice came over the CB radio and said, hey, you, in that little red car. And I just sat back. And I didn't know what to do at first. And I picked up the little microphone and I said, yes. And he says, are you a friend of Bill W's? And I picked up the microphone and I said, thank you. What do you say? What do you say? I was caught hands down. There was no way getting out of that one. So I'll tell you, it was a slow ride home from there on in. Very slow. And I don't know who that person was, but if you're in this audience, thank you. I think you saved not only my life, but some guy's life that day. And, you know, again, a little grateful, just a little grateful. Little things like this happened to me all through my sobriety. When I need God the most, things just happen. He just appears. I don't know how. And it could be when I'm having a day when I haven't even thought once about my higher power. But lo and behold, it's there. He's there. And or she or whoever your higher power is. And I don't know how to be any more grateful at times, you know. And there are times when I am so ungrateful and I'm so mean and I am so angry about something. And then all of a sudden I see someone go by and they're crippled or they're, you know, handicapped in some way. Or they're having a really bad day. Maybe they had a terrible accident. And I think, you know, who am I to be so ungrateful? You know, my day isn't so bad after all. I can walk and talk, and I haven't had an accident today. You know, and this isn't because of me. I haven't done any of this because of me. I did it because of you. Because you grabbed me by the shirt collar, and you said, this is what you're going to do, Kate. When I was 5 years sober, I got involved in service. And again, it was, what's a GSR? Well, I found out real quick. I became my group's first GSR. And, you know, give me a little control, and that was what I wanted. I didn't realize that being a GSR and going onward and downward from there was a humbling experience, you know. And I think that's why they wanted me to do that. I think that's why God gave me the gift of wanting to do so much service. And because it's a humbling experience. And I needed to be brought down to right size when I got here. And that's what you did. You brought me down to right size. I suffered from chronic big shotism. And yeah, I had no reason to be a big shot or feel that way. I was run-of-the-mill alcoholic, just someone who was curled up on the floor screaming to die. And you took me and you brought me back to life and you taught me how to have relationships with people. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing I've learned in the program is how to just be kind to people, because I was always so angry and so mean. And And I always took from you. If you had nothing to give me, I had nothing to give to you. I had no use for you. And I've learned today, I've learned in this program over time, that being here and learning the lessons is an incredible thing. Working these steps, working the traditions, living the traditions, living the steps, I can't say how full my life is because it's overflowing. And, you know, I look at the people around me that I work with and that I encounter outside in my daily life, and I think, you know, how would we be if this world all had a 12-step program and we all worked it? How would this world be? And I think Fernando is the one that said it last night. You know, and I think about that all the time, and I think what a beautiful world it would be. But it starts with one person, so why doesn't it just start with me and let me do a random act of kindness today to someone? Because I am grateful to be here. I'm grateful for every aspect of my life. I'm grateful when, you know, people call me up and I don't want to do something, but I say yes anyway because that's what I was told to do. Because it always ends up being one of the best things I've ever done. I always have a wonderful time doing things that I don't want to do. So, I don't know how much time I have. Am I done? I have more? Oh, okay. I don't wear a watch. I always had a belief in a higher power. You know, I went to Sunday school and my family raised me to be a good little, you know, Catholic girl. And on Sundays I was a Baptist because my mom took me to her church too. So I was confused, but I knew there was a higher power out there. And I didn't believe in the higher power that was my parents because their higher power was an angry God. You know, God is going to punish you, God. And I had a feeling that, you know, God was not a punishing God. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I talk about this often, I may have been very sick and I was shaky and I was irritable and I was very angry when I got here. But when I did walk into the rooms, I felt like I had been embraced. And yet no one talked to me. I was very scary in those days. But I felt like I had been embraced. And, you know, every single meeting I go to, no matter where I go, I always feel like I have been embraced when I walk into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think I've ever been to a bad meeting. Maybe I haven't liked something someone has said. But I learned early in sobriety when I tried to walk out of a room one day during a meeting and so I didn't like what someone was sharing. And my sponsor grabbed a hold of me and said, sit down and shut up and listen. And I did. And after the meeting, she said, you will never walk out of a room of Alcoholics Anonymous again until the end of the meeting because you do not know what words are going to keep you sober today. And it could be those words that you've walked out on that you're going to need at the end of the day to keep you sober. And so you will listen to every single word that is said at every single meeting. And I have to say, I've almost done that 100%, almost. But I've never walked out. But I have to tell you, she is so right. Because I have been kept sober sometimes by someone who has walked in, who has 6 hours of sobriety, someone who has 6 days or 6 months. And they have absolutely awed me with something that they have said. And for that, I am grateful. And I thank you so much for letting me share today.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm so grateful I'm here with my sponsor, and I have just so many friends in this audience that it blows me away that there are people that I know and I see all the time, and I've made friends since I've been here. And the whole feeling is like, I know every one of you because you know me. And we are this common cause. And it's such a beautiful thing. And to share it, that language of the heart that transcends any kind of boundaries or borders or languages that get spoken. It's just awesome. And not saving necessarily the best for last, but certainly the longest timer, I say the long timer for last, is Jim from Utah.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jim, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November the 14th, 1964. That may not impress you, but it impresses the hell out of me. Wow. I don't know. I had a whole speech planned. I wrote it down. I made a mental note. I lost both of them. So whatever you hear is what it's going to be, because I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. You know, I am so grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous found me in prison. And when I got out of that prison, I came to you people. A guy came into that prison and he used to tell funny stories. And he had a Cadillac and he had a blonde with a fur coat. And he told me, he said, you know, Jim, when you get out of here, I'll show you a way to live. And he said, in your first year of sobriety, I want you to write down what you want and put it in an envelope. So what I did is I wrote down that I wanted his Cadillac, his blonde wife, and his job. And when I got out of prison, I went to my first meeting, and I believe in sobriety because I am slow. I went to my first meeting with him when I got out of prison, and I heard, you know, if you like what we have, take it home with you. So I looked around the room to see which was the best looking broad in the joint, because that's what I wanted to take home. And it didn't work. So I went to my second meeting, and in my second meeting, there was a little girl sitting there, and she weighed about 85 pounds, and she had long red hair cleaned down to her rear, and she was in one of those hippie dresses, because this was in the 60s. And I looked at her, and I looked at somebody else, and I said, how long has she been sober? And they said, a year. And I said, there is no way that broad has been sober a year. That's the sickest looking woman I ever saw in my life. And I thought, well, I'm going to stick around and see if she, stays here. And last September, I was privileged to present that lady with a medallion for 46 years of sobriety. We became friends, we became lovers, and then we became husband and wife, and she's still my best friend. She's still a redhead. I don't know, my mind went out the window. We ended up with six kids. I don't like kids. I was in San Antonio in the 40s. during World War II. I came in on a freight train, five high, and they had me sitting on the outside of the freight car coming into San Antonio and ODs in July. And if you don't know what that is, that's olive drabs and the heavy-duty suit. And I was sitting on the side of the car because what had happened is, you know, in our big book, it talks about switching from scotch to brandy. And, you know, scotch drinkers to me are wimps. Because if there's any scotch drinkers in the house, I apologize. That's your problem. You know, it's like Japanese beer. You can't get there. You get so far, and then you just drop off and you're sober again. So what I did is I decided that I would switch from scotch to brandy, and I got a hold of some slow gin and cherry brandy and drank that. And I heaved all over the four guys below me, and that's why I was sitting on the side of the car when I came into San Antonio. And I found out one thing you had here. You had that tequila, you know. And in the bottom of it, you had the little worm. And I saw that little worm, and I always was trying to get that little worm out of that end of that bottle so I could just squeeze that little son of a bitch and say, spit it out, spit it out. You know? So I decided I'd just go ahead and drink the worm as well, you know. Anyway, when I went to that first week that I was out of prison, I went to one of those sober dances. And a guy made me stand at the door. He said I couldn't go in. He said, when did you get out? And I didn't know I had my number tattooed across my forehead. And so I told him, and he said, well, you have to stand here for a whole year, for 1 hour, and greet people. And then I'll let you into the dance. And if there's anything I wanted to do was to meet you people. You know, I'd look at you and I'd say, you got the same socks on you had on last week, you know. And you, I hope you fall down and break your leg so I can take your woman home, you know. But I stood there. I didn't know that I was so dumb. This is why I talk about sobriety. I was so dumb I couldn't figure out that I could have paid my $2.50 and walked in like everybody else. So I stood there at that door at that first dance, and I went in, and it was around Thanksgiving time. So they were giving away prizes. They were giving away turkeys, and they were giving away tickets to other events, and they were giving away money. And I thought, boy, could I use that. And he gave me this ticket, and I went in, and they had the drawing, and the first ticket was drawn was mine. I won. And I thought, boy, I'm going to get a turkey, or I'm going to get some money, or I'm going to get something. And I ran up to the stage, and I gave him my ticket, and he handed me two tickets to the policeman's ball. Now, if there's any place I wanted to be at that time was the policeman's ball. But, you know, going on, what happened, by the way, that redhead was a cop, and I married her, you know. I got even. I don't know. I had a sponsor. You told me to get a sponsor. So I went up and I asked this guy. I said, this Chuck that came into the institution. And by the way, you know, I wanted that, opened up that envelope, and I wanted that blonde, that Cadillac, and her fur coat. I ended up with the redhead and a Volkswagen. She still doesn't own a fur coat. But anyway, you told me to get a sponsor. So I went up to Chuck and I said, Chuck, I said, will you be my sponsor? And he said, hell no. He says, you're too sick. He says, go ask somebody else. So I did, and I found a man by the name of Gene. And Gene was an aeronautical engineer. And Gene led me through the steps. He didn't take me through them. He didn't force me through them. He led me through them. And Gene was an aeronautical engineer, and when I first got sober, the aeronautical business was going out of business down in Long Beach, and he lost his job. And I went to Gene, and I said, Gene, I said, you know, this is terrible. You're losing your job. And he said, no, Jim, he says, you don't understand. He said, it's better than it was. He said, you know, he said, they've got to pay me 85% of my base salary without taxes for a whole year. He said, and I'm sober today. That's better than it was. Well, after a little while, Gene lost his house and his Cadillacs and his wife. And I went to him and I said, Gene, I said, this is terrible. And Gene said, no. He said, Jim, he says, you don't understand. He said, it better than it was. He said, I don't have to listen to her bitch at me anymore. And he said, I don't have to, you know, pay attention to those kids. And he said, it's better than it was because I'm sober today. And I didn't understand that. After the year was over with, Gene, I told him, I went to him and I said, Gene, I said, your time is up. You're not going to get any more pay. My God, what's happening to you? And he said, no, you don't understand, Jim. He said, they offered me my job back in the machine shop. He said, where I started out. And he said, it's better than it was. Because I'm still sober today. It's better than it was. He was standing at his machine one night and on the swing shift, and the little guy went out and drank his lunch and came in with a forklift and was about knee high and come around the corner and hit Gene in the knees and almost took him off. And he ended up in the hospital for about 6 months, and I went to him and I said, my God, Gene, things are really terrible from where you started out to where you're at. He says, no, Jim, you don't understand. He said, it's better than it was. He said, I'm sober today. It's better than it was. He said, besides, he said, I converted two of the nurses. You know, and he got out of the hospital and he went back down. He was in the Yolana Club in Long Beach and sitting there, you know, in the wheelchair. He was never going to be able to walk again. And I said, Gene, I said, my God, this is terrible. And he said, no, Jim, you don't understand. He said, now, he said, I can make 12-step calls 24 hours a day. And I'm sober. It's better than it was. And I didn't understand that. And one night I was playing in a band, and Gene knew it. That's what I was a musician. And I come from an alcoholic family. I got to back up a little bit. My dad was a bootlegger. My grandmother made dandelion wine for medicinal purposes. And we had the sickest family in Washington. But anyway, Gene is there in the Ilana Club, and he can't walk. And I went to him, and I said, Gene, this is terrible. And he said, no, you don't understand. I make 12-step calls 24 hours a day, better than it was, because I'm sober. I was playing in the band this night, and Gene called me up, and he said, Jim, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, what is it, Gene? I'll do anything. Do you need some food? Do you need whatever? And he went from that house that he had with the Cadillacs and everything else to where I started out when I first got to the program on Skid Row, right around the corner from the Ilana Club in Long Beach. And he said, I want you to come over tonight. And I said, Gene, what do you want? And he said, I want you to go through the third and seventh step prayer with me tonight. Because he said, I think my time on earth is over and might die tonight. And I cussed God. And I said, Gene, my God, this is terrible from where you came to where you are. And he shook his finger at me. And he said, Jim, I want you to remember one thing. He said, if I die tonight, I will die sober. And that's better than it was. And I want you to always remember that. You see, no matter what, and I'll get to that part of the story in a minute, some of those children I had when I was out there running and gunning and doing the things that I was doing and ending up in jail and ending up in prison. And I drank away my children, gave them away. I had a little daughter that I wanted to go see when I was out of prison for a year and had a job, because you people told me to get a job. I wondered how I was going to pay my rent 30 days after I got here. I came to you people and I said, you know, my rent's coming due. What'll I do? And he smiled that real sick AA smile and said, get a job. That's a hell of a thing to tell a thief. You know, and talk about gratitude. Everybody in my neighborhood, man, at Christmas time, they're grateful I'm sober, you know, because I don't do my Christmas shopping in your house anymore, you know. And I used to do that. And when you woke up Christmas morning, we were both surprised. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to go see this little girl. And the state of California told me, no. after a year. You can't do that. We've told her that you're dead. You're better off. Don't contact her. And I came back and I beat my fist on my high chair, kicked my slats out of my crib, and I cussed and I screamed in the meetings, and you people told me, you know, let it go. Let go, let God. When I was 23 months sober, I came home from work and I was miserable and everything else. And I went to my door, and there was a wire on my door and said, "Jim, if you want Robbie back, call collect." 23 months sober, the state of California gave me back that daughter. Made me a mother of a 14-year-old. Ain't that a bitch? Wasn't even married due to the program. That's gratitude. I had a son. And when I was 28 years sober, I went over to give my daughter in Sacramento her medallion for her. I have children that have sobriety from 24 years to 15 years to 16 years to whatever my youngest son has today. You know, and I don't question that. I went over to give my daughter her medallion, and my son called her. And, oh my God, Lisa. to make an amend, because Jean led me through those steps, and when I got to the ninth step, I thought, well, I owe my son an amend. I was over there, and he called my daughter's house. And she said, "Would you like to talk to your dad?" And he said, "Yes." And he came and he got me. And that was the first mistake. I got in his car to go to his house. And I was a captive in his house. And so I was going to make this great amend to my son that I had drank away. And he said, "Where were you when I needed you? Where were you when I was trying to learn to tie my shoes? Where were you when my stepdad was beating the hell out of me? Where were you when I was going to school with holes in my shoes and tattered clothes?" And I tried to explain to him, "Bob, I was either loaded, drunk, you know, or locked up someplace." And he said, "No." He said, "That's not an excuse." He said, "That's not a reason for not being there for me when I needed you." And he told me to get the hell out of his house. Told me never to contact him, never to call him, never to write him. He never ever wanted to see me again. My eyes may sweat, and if it bothers you, that's too bad. If it ain't going to bother me. I came back again, and I screamed, and I hollered, and I beat my fists on my high chair, kicked my slats out of my crib, and you people, one more time, said, "You try, you know, your sweet smile, one more time, that sweet AA smile, I love it." Yeah. You said, you know, you tried to make the amend, he didn't want to accept it, but you did the footwork. A year later, I went back over to Sacramento to present that daughter another medallion, and I sure as hell did not want to go anywhere near his house. You know, because I got enough. He told me he never wanted to see me again. I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sacramento. That night, my son was sitting there in his first meeting. We made amends to each other. We spent a week together. We became friends. Every year he would come over here. Every year I would go over there. My son, contracted brain cancer. That one of my other daughters, 4 years ago this month, had brain cancer. She had 15 years on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and passed away. I thought I had lost her. to a young lady that's sitting in the front row. Her name is Shirley. Told me I didn't lose her. She passed away, that she was a child of God. And I bought that. She passed away. I didn't lose her. My son contacted the cancer 2 years after he was sober. Went through 2 craniotomies, radiation, chemotherapy a couple of times. A year ago this month, I was privileged to go over and become his caregiver for 10 months. We went to meetings. My son would say, you don't drink no matter what, even if you want to, no matter what. That was his favorite saying. We went to 2 meetings a day, every day, and on Sundays we went to 3 for almost 10 months. He became so ill, he became bedridden. And like I say, I was privileged to be there for 10 months, to be his primary caregiver. And one of his hospice people are here in the audience tonight, today. And I'll never forget her. I'll love her forever. My son passed away 6 days before his 60th birthday this year. But you know what? I remember what my sponsor told me. I remember what my son told me. You don't drink no matter what. You know, you don't drink no matter what. And also, that it's better than it was. Better than it was. And you know, I'm an ex-convict. I stand before you because of you, not because of me. They tell you that a fellowship will grow up about you. Fellowship has grown up about me here. It grew up about me in Sacramento. And there's one here today. You know, and I love the things. I love poetry. I love poetry. And, you know, I love the one about, you know, I sought my soul I could not see. I sought God and he evaded me. And I sought a friend and then I found all three. And that's what I do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I try to reach out to a friend. Like I say, you know, that time that I spent with my son, I really was there when he needed me. But through you people, you know. And I like the idea that a song is not a song until you sing it, and a bell is not a bell until you ring it, and love isn't love until you give it away. And you know, I'm not grateful for anything. I am grateful for everything. I am grateful for the good, and I am grateful for the bad. And I want to thank you for allowing me to share. Thank you.